Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to this week's episode of Firefly Willows LIVE. Our host this week is Mildred Lynn McDonald with Healing Conversations. Join Mildred Lynn as she chats with Dr. Georgina Cannon, award-winning author, corporate speaker, and practicing consulting hypnotist. Have you ever wondered about past lives? Listen as Dr. Cannon talks about her new book, Return Again, How to Find Meaning in Your Past Lives and Your Interlives. Mildred Lynn will also speak with the dynamic duo of Mary Reynolds Thompson, author, life coach, and facilitator of poetry and journal therapy, and Bruce Thompson, assistant professor at the California Institute of Integral Studies. They'll talk about how separation from the earth and the natural world may be at the root of so many of today's problems, and how we may recover our connection to the earth. Our roundtable topic will be, what beliefs and habits will you take with you into the new year? We're excited. Give us a listen. During this season of sharing, peace, and goodwill, Firefly Willows LIVE would like to once again acknowledge the following rescue organization and its volunteers for the generous and valuable gift of their time and energies. Firefly Willows LIVE is proud to support Canine Paw Print Rescue, a new animal rescue group located in Pittsburgh, California. Canine Paw Print volunteers are experienced, dedicated, well-known, and loving. Hardworking, too. Canine Paw Print Rescue exists to rescue, rehabilitate, and ultimately to rehome abandoned, stray, and neglected animals from shelter situations. They work closely with shelters, other rescues, and the community to improve the lives of animals in need. Find them at caninepawprintrescue.org or on Facebook at Facebook/caninepawprintrescue. Donations to support the animals may be made via PayPal to caninepawprintrescue@gmail.com.
Good morning, everybody. This is Healing Conversations with Mildred Lynn McDonald, live from Los Altos, California. And I have to mention that it is a pretty rainy day here. Rainy, but still the weather is beautiful. So we'd like to kick our show off today with our weekly roundtable. And I'd like to welcome John Caracella.
Good morning.
Deb Caracella.
Good morning.
And Heisey Lutemers. Hello, Heisey.
Hello.
Hi, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah. Are you enjoying the rain?
I am. I love this weather.
Yeah, I know. Makes the flowers grow.
It does, and the smell of wet dogs is just wonderful.
Now, today we have a pretty interesting roundtable topic, and this is what it is for our listeners. The topic's called Out with the Old and In with the New. And what John and I and Hi-C would love to explore is what beliefs and habits are we going to keep with us this year and which ones are we going to discourage? And to start things off, I'd like to put one of my new habits forward. And the new habit is this. I've learned a mantra, and the mantra is good enough, press on. Good enough, press on. The reason this mantra is so important to me is because I tend to be an overly conscientious person. I don't know if Heisey and Deb and John will agree with that. I'll take that as a firm on the fence.
Sounds good.
Okay. So what's so important is I find that I tend to be overly conscientious. I'm not a perfectionist by any means, but I find that overly conscientiousness does lend itself to worry and concern and perhaps a little bit of more worry and concern. Worry and concern sprinkled with worry and concern. So when I came across this mantra, I found whenever I said it to myself, it made me laugh. So if I'm pursuing a task and I find myself in that wibbly-wobbly place where I don't know whether to invest more time or effort or not, I simply say to myself, good enough, press on. And it has magical results. So that is definitely something that I want to take with me into the new year, and what I would like to leave behind is about 10 or 20% of that worry and concern that goes with the other part of being overly conscientious. So that would be what I'd offer our listeners.
So, Mildred, if somebody was a perfectionist, how would you suggest that they try to incorporate that saying? Because they may see that as, oh, well, then you just kind of don't do your best, or you don't do things to the fullest result, or something like that.
For me personally, I really like that question because I can understand how someone might go in that direction. For a perfectionist, it is finding the what is good enough, being happy and content with the good enough. So, John or Deb, do you have any feedback that you'd like to offer on that?
Well, I was thinking, so the good enough press on thing, what shifts inside you when you say good enough press on? In other words, why do you want to adopt this new way of being?
Well, for me, I like to adopt it because it makes me feel good. Whenever I say good enough press on, my chakras open up. I feel good. I feel like I'm in flow.
Like the pressure, there's some pressure that's relieved.
Absolutely. Not only pressure being relieved, but laughter following that relieving of pressure.
Well,
laughing at myself.
You're always really good at laughing, finding ways to laugh in situations. So that's pretty handy if that triggers that. That's good.
Well, I would think that people out there, if they could find a little mantra that would make them release and then laugh and perhaps laugh at themselves, it's all also very freeing, liberating, and non-judgmental.
And how did you discover that, Mildred Lynn?
Well, I discovered it because my sister, who lives in Newfoundland, Canada, we were having a conversation about a list of things that we needed to do for my parents, to help my parents in Cape Breton. And I was going on and on, maybe too detail-oriented, and she said, Mildred Lynn, good enough, press on.
Oh, so it was a gift from your sister.
My sister, yes. And as soon as she said it, something clicked inside of me. So I feel that when a person's ready to receive the shift or the message or the energy of the shift, it's so nice when it takes hold and it feels good. It felt like the perfect thing to say at that time.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. I think that your last comment about when a person is ready for the shift or for the new realization that is when it will actually take hold. For years now, as my children have been growing and moving on and maturing in their lives, people have come up to me and said, okay, well, now that your kids are off at school or now that your kids are this and you don't need to be the stay-at-home mom that you've been for all of these years, what are you going to do? And so I've never really understood that question until maybe this year. And I don't think I was ready to understand that question prior to this year. So the opportunity to do things this year that were new, that were a little bit of a stretch, that were beyond the typical stay-at-home mom, take care of the household kind of things, has really allowed me to see that there could be a whole bunch of things to do that aren't just mom-related. And I've been enjoying them and anticipating them and really looking forward to moving forward into the new year or into the future years with this shift, with this, I'm not just mom anymore. I'm mom, but I'm also this. I also do that. And I'm enjoying it. And I'm enjoying the new people that it has brought into my life.
So kind of a new thing that you're bringing into the new year is
a realization of a broader sense of who I am.
A broader sense of self.
Yes.
But you don't really know necessarily what it all is yet.
No.
So it's kind of adventure time.
Yes. Yeah.
Deb, does it feel good? Is that one thing that's the benefit?
Actually, it does, because I think the whole, like the comment of earlier, when the person is ready for that new, because before, the thought of being something other than mom did not feel good. I wasn't ready for that. But over this last year, I don't have to just be mom, and it does feel good. And it's not that the kids don't still need someone to talk to, or perhaps a suggestion here or there, or, you know, okay, yes, I'll help you do your laundry, whatever. And those things are all great and satisfying still, but they're not only what I am and do. And that does feel good.
Well, that sounds...
How about you, John?
Well, you know, I'm going to go in the other direction first, and that is something that I'm starting to understand how to leave behind. Over the last year, I've been, you know, trying to figure out where to really put a stake in the ground and drive my career energy forward after having left high tech and doing a bunch of different things. I'm trying to push on into something new, and I've recognized that there was, I guess, a fear of failure that existed as a kind of a deep undercurrent in my whole perception of self and what happens with my work energy, my career energy. And I'm starting to realize that, you know, and maybe our listeners already all understand this and practice it. And I think sometimes we understand it, but don't necessarily practice it. Sitting with that fear and really letting that fear speak to me helps me to see where that fear is based on the practical realities of making sure that I have food to eat and a roof over my head, and the other aspects of it, which are more like, well, somebody's going to think something of me. Somebody's going to judge me in a certain way if the particular endeavor I've chosen doesn't go a certain way. And that fear really can be left behind. You know, I definitely need to make sure that I have enough food to eat, but I don't have to make sure that everybody's perceptions of me are just so. I can pursue the things that feel good to me, that feel fulfilling to me, and let go of the notion of, well, if it doesn't work out, that somebody's going to think something about me. So letting go of fear of failure is a big deal, but doing so in a discerning way, because fear is a teacher. It's there to illuminate things. So,
John,
yeah, I think letting that go.
How do you feel? How do you feel when you go to that place where you're just going to let things be what they are?
Well, it feels a little, there's definitely vertigo involved. You know, it's not safe at first, but you know, once you take the leap and you're falling and you realize that falling doesn't actually cause you to land anywhere hard, you know, then it becomes flying, right? The fall ceases to be a fall and starts to be flying. And
yeah.
I think that's a big deal. And that feeling is, you know, flying is not a natural, you know, comfortable feeling for me yet either, but sure as heck beats the idea of falling.
And how about you, Heisi? Anything that you'd like to develop in this year coming up or leave behind?
Well, one thing I was going to say, going back to your phrase of good enough, press on, is I think on two levels, whether it's for a perfectionist or for people who often think that what they do is never good enough, which I think may get into perfectionism, is that phrase really helps a person come to accept that if they do their best, if they try as hard as they can, or if they have done as much as they can within whatever constraints they may be working in, be it time or resources or whatever, then that phrase really helps them to accept, I did my best, I did what I could, or what I did is enough, rather than always feeling as if there was something else I could have or should have done. And I think for me, what I'm going to be working on leaving behind is a feeling that there is some sort of a separation or distinct difference between giving and receiving. Because I think, especially on the receiving end, because I think that I, as well as many other people, tend to be challenged to receive or accept when something is being offered or done for me versus always wanting to do for or to give to. But in receiving, we're actually giving to the other person the opportunity to have the chance to give, to experience the joy of giving. And, you know, I've realized that if I don't allow someone to give to me or give back to me in some way, then I have in effect, denied them the joy of experiencing what it means to give the same way that I get joy from being able to give or do for other people.
That's an excellent point. Why do you think we're like that, I wonder?
Well, some of it probably has to do with how we're brought up or society or whatever, you know, and I think that there's a difference that has to be recognized between receiving and taking. And so, you know, we hear that people are givers, but oftentimes they end up in unhealthy relationships or situations with people that are takers, who take advantage of that giving, who just want to take what they can from that person or situation. And that's not the same thing as receiving and being open to what someone has to offer us, but knowing that if I receive from them, it not only gives them something, but it gives me a chance to give back to them as well.
I think one of the things that leads us down that path is to receive something genuinely kind of implies that you're willing to be vulnerable in that way. And it may be to receive something when you're in a place of need, acknowledging that you have the need, is indeed an acknowledgement of a kind of vulnerability. And, you know, I think we get out of the habit of allowing the universe to provide for us. We feel like we have to make everything happen ourselves. So receiving is kind of an acknowledgement of our incompleteness, and our incompleteness can make us feel vulnerable, and we don't like to feel vulnerable, I think.
Well, yeah, our society, I think, tries to characterize receiving as, or being vulnerable, as some form of weakness.
Right.
You know, and therefore people who think that, oh, well, if I have to receive something or ask to receive something if I'm in need, then it's showing a weakness, which is not a good thing, or is judged, or is not safe, or, you know, whatever the reasons are around it. So what I'm hoping to kind of leave behind is, if I can open myself more to being willing to receive and see it also as a part of the whole continuum of giving and receiving rather than two distinct things, then it means I'm also leaving behind a tendency to not be willing to show myself as vulnerable in the world.
Yeah, I see. I think I'm working on that too, actually. The idea that there are some things that I don't have to develop mastery around because there are other people who can provide that. And in allowing other people to provide for me, I'm creating an environment where their gifts can be demonstrated, can be offered, and find a place in the world.
And I think that comes back to Mildred's phrase of good enough, press on, because it means that if I can recognize I've done everything I can and that's good enough, then it also opens the opportunity, like John was saying, for somebody else to now offer what they have that can continue to build on what I have offered or done, rather than thinking it's an all or nothing, either all giving or all receiving or nothing, or all I have to do more, 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 and nothing or no one else can do that or whatever. So I think it also ties into her phrase in that way.
Yeah. As you guys were speaking, what came into my consciousness was, I'm more than happy to accept help from anybody that will help me. And more than happy. So I'll just throw that out there to anybody. If you're looking to gift someone, here I am.
Well, Mildred, just keep that in mind when you're having computer problems and I happen to find out about it.
For our listeners out there, I have to send accolades High Seas Way, because he's saved my bacon more than once. So that's an excellent roundtable for today. I love the theme of vulnerability, and I'm sure that's something that our listeners can take away and explore for themselves over the next week. Thank you so much, Hi C and John and Deb. Love talking with you, love chatting with you as usual. And next week, our weekly roundtable will be moderated by Hi C Ludmers. So thank you for listening, everybody. Stay tuned. We're going to have a short little announcement, and then we'll be moving on to Toronto for a chat with Dr. Georgina Cannon. So catch you later, John, Hi C, and Deb. Thank you very much.
Bye, thank you. Bye-bye, Mildred.
We've heard about it for a generation or more.
Now it's here, the end of the Mayan calendar's great cycle.
It's a time of great change, and we are the change makers.
We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Solstice 2012, 100 hearts drumming the rhythm of rebirth. At Stillheart, Friday, December 21st.
A new beginning awaits.
Join in the power of community and sacred ceremony as we shed our collective past. Drum, dance, and sing in celebration as we usher in this new age of collaboration and unity.
Visit fireflywillows.com/solstice2012 for all the details.
Truly, this opportunity will come only once in your lifetime.
Friday, December 21st at Stillheart in Woodside. Come join us. Be part of the rebirth.
fireflywillows.com/solstice2012. Register today.
Welcome back. This is Mildred Lynn McDonald, and you're listening to Healing Conversations from Los Altos, California. We hope that you're enjoying the show today, and thank you for joining us. In a few minutes, we'll head over to Toronto, Canada, and chat with Dr. Georgina Cannon, award-winning author, change catalyst, corporate speaker, international facilitator, and practicing consulting hypnotist. In fact, she's often referred to as the public face of hypnosis in Canada. If you've ever wondered about past lives, then you'll savor a chance to hear Dr. Cannon talk about her new book. It's called Return Again, How to Find Meaning in Your Past Lives and Your Interlives. Prepare to step out of your box because it's going to be an informative and intriguing conversation. A little later, we'll beam over to the San Francisco Bay Area, which is the home of the dynamic duo of Mary Reynolds Thompson and Bruce Thompson. Join us as we explore how the separation from the earth and our natural world may be at the root of so many of today's problems, from a sense of alienation and lack of meaning to addictions that run the gamut from alcoholism and consumerism. So how do we rediscover our connection to the earth? Join us. It's sure to be a lively discussion. And now, without further ado, let's head over to Toronto, Canada, and talk to Dr. Georgina Cannon.
Hello. Good morning.
Hello, Georgina. How are you doing?
Terrific. Thank you. We've got rain here, too, by the way.
Pardon me?
We have rain here also in Toronto.
Oh, you do, you do.
Yes.
Gosh, maybe we have rain from coast to coast.
It's all to do with global warming. It should be snow by now, but we have rain.
Oh my. You know, I always say to my friends in East Coast Canada when they ask me how the weather is in California, I say lovingly that I don't discuss that after October because I'd like to keep them as friends.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Yeah. We East Coasters get really annoyed with people in Vancouver who send us pictures of tulips in the garden in February.
I know. It's a terrible thing. Now, yes. Georgina, we're so happy to have you here today. You have a new book that was launched, I believe, in October of this year.
Yes.
And when I was reviewing your book, looking at your website, which is very intriguing and wonderful, I noticed that you had also published a book in 2004 called Return, Past Life Regression in You. I was wondering, and I'm sure our listeners might be wondering, what was the inspiration to create a new book?
Well, the information has changed and expanded, and I have been doing this work now for about 15 years in the clinic, and had a lot of new case histories, but also realized that there were some unanswered questions out there, questions particularly around karma and if we can change our karma. Also, how do I get all of the information that I've received? And what do I do with it? You know, that's nice, but where do I put it and how do I use it? And I discovered that some people become almost like a born-again spiritualist and want to throw the baby out with the bathwater after a couple of these journeys. And, you know, it's important not to do that. We want evolution, not revolution. So a big part of the book is about integration of the wisdom and the knowledge that you have into your current life. Also, there's some how-tos in there about including changing your karma, how to do that.
So would you say it's a little bit of a how-to book for those who want to dive in a bit into this area?
Yes, it's more of a how-to book than my previous two books.
Okay.
But it also is really very interactive. So at the end of every chapter, there's a piece that says, now consider this. So, right, so they've read the chapter, and then there are questions around how it affects their current life and where they are in their current life. So I wanted it to be more of a conversation.
Okay, a conversation. Now, when I was going through your book, I really liked the way it was laid out. And one of the things I was hoping that we might be able to do together today is introduce some concepts to our listeners who may be familiar with some of these concepts. Maybe they're not familiar, but the common denominator would be that it would make them think.
Yes, exactly.
If they're open to that, just like if they're open to my mantra, good enough, push on.
That's right.
So with your first chapter, I was really interested in the question that you posed. And the question is this, do we have a body? Is that something that is an illusion? Is it real? What's your take on that?
Well, I think it's something we borrowed. It's a bit like saying, do you have transportation? You know, so this is our car for carrying the soul and the energy that we need to experience the growth of the soul. And we choose the body, as I talk about in the book, to help answer and accommodate the soul purpose. So we choose a certain lifestyle and a certain body, and including a family and a location and a time that will help the soul grow. So the body really is just the vehicle. It's the bus or the subway or whatever you want to call it. And the only difference is that usually we take more care of our car than we do of our body.
Exactly. I have a good friend who's a naturopathic doctor in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and she posed the question once to me, perhaps maybe 5 years ago. She said, are you friends with your body?
Yes.
And I thought that was a very powerful statement. And to me, somehow, it's applicable to the concept that you're talking about here, about taking care of your body, like you take care of something that you loved and cherished.
Yes. Indeed. And, you know, when people talk about their body, you get people coming in and say, going, I wish I was taller, or I wish I had less, you know, a smaller rear end, or I wish my legs weren't so thick, or I wish this, or I wish that. And I stop them and I say, is it working? You know, you think about your cellular structure of your body. Most of us have two of what we need and one of what we need to make the body work. Plus, it all works. You know, the lungs work and the digestive system works, and all without our thought. We need to be grateful. We need to honor it. In fact, be in awe of it, that it's working. Not much else works as well.
Now, Gina, I had did a visualization once. I just wanted to run this past you because it relates to the body concept. I did a visualization because the concept hit me. If there's, you know, if there's a possibility that I was here before, in my naive way of thinking, I thought I would just be a male and female version of Mildred throughout the ages. But when I did my visualization, what came up for me was a shopping mall full of people of all ages, sizes, genders, cultures, and it took me back. I gasped because it didn't fit with what I had thought in my linear thinking. I stayed with it for a while, and then the wisdom in that became clear to me. But in the context of past lives, would you say that my initial view of just a variation on a theme of myself throughout the ages is a bit naive, and the more realistic concept might be more variety, as in a shopping mall?
Well, I wouldn't say it was naive. What happens always is that the visions or the impressions come in a way that you will receive them. As an example, when people go to the interlife and they are greeted by a team or their guides or whatever, sometimes they show up as light, but other times they show up as beloved grandparents or Buddha or Jesus or Mary. They show up in a way that is user-friendly, if you like, so it doesn't get the person confused. It helps them open up their heart and receive what it is they're trying to say. So when it was presented to you as a shopping mall, it was something that was familiar, something that you just didn't go, oh, what's that, and get all caught up in the what's that. You just took the information.
So perhaps I was one to, and I do this, I do love to people watch. So, so it came to me in a form that made sense, as you were saying.
Yes, yes. We really do. I mean, one of the things we know as instructors, and when I teach other instructors, one of the things I say is always teach in relation to something they already know, so that there's a hint of recognition before they're learning new stuff.
I like that. That's very wise. Now, the other area that you talk about extensively is the soul-body agreement, and dive into that in the context of a woman having a baby. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
And before, when the soul decides to come in, or it is decided the soul comes in, as we talked about just briefly before, the soul decides what type of body it needs, what type of family it needs, what its soul purpose is that's been intimated, or they've learned that. So they choose very carefully their parents. And usually when people say, you mean I really, really chose my mother? Oh, my gosh. And I say, but think about what you're learning. Think about what it is and why you chose her or him. And there's an aha moment there, because people choose parents sometimes not to make life easy, but specifically so they can find their light in their own way. They become resilient. They learn to become resilient.
And is resiliency a theme that seems to be prevalent in this work?
Yeah, victimization is usually one of the themes that come in quite often. People are victimized or allow themselves to be victimized from one lifetime to another. And when they come in into the clinic and they look at it, they say to me things like, how come I always choose losers? Or how come I can't keep a job? You know, like, well, my last three jobs, the boss was appalling. And I say, well, let's look at the pattern. And then you see that there's a pattern of victimization. And these people, the reason they came in this time is because they need to learn boundaries. They need to make choices. So that's the soul lesson usually, and then we do the work around that.
And what would be the flip side of resilience? Would that, or the lower vibration, you would work towards resilience, what would you need to flip or have an opportunity to flip?
Well, that, it would be victimization. If you're always a victim, you know, there are many people, unfortunately, that are born into families or come into families that are either alcoholic or emotionally distant or addictive in some way or brutal, and they have to learn resilience or how to manage themselves, how to get beyond that. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then they will end up as victims. Now, as a child, of course, you don't have any choice. You do what you can. But as an adult, you can make choice.
Now, I remember when I first became aware of, you know, the possibilities of past lives, and I heard the concept that we choose the situation we come in to experience. I found that myself a very liberating moment, and also a moment that created trust in my higher self. Would that be a common reaction of people who become aware of it?
As long as you embrace it, as long as you say, well, in fact, if I did choose, then I really am the author of my life. So I really better start writing it the way I want it to turn out.
Yes, yeah. Okay, that's very interesting. Now, the other concept that you have about in your book is planes of existence. So the material plane, as we talk about in our physical world, something you call the force plane, and then the third. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. The planes of existence are really how we, in all of our magnificence, all the different levels that we are, how we interact with these different spaces. So we do have our physical world, the material plane, you know, how we connect with the planet, the Earth. The hard rock surface of it. You know, I'm sitting at my desk now, how I physically engage with that. Then there's the etheric plane, which is the energy from which your body operates. It's like the engine. And then there's the astral plane, which is your spiritual energy. That's the part of you that you leave behind in the interlife, so you can always connect. And then there's the mental plane, which is your thought processes. And we know that thoughts are energy, what you think about, you bring about. So that comes through the intelligence part of you. And then the rest of the very high spiritual evolutionary planes that people like Buddha and probably Jesus. And my thoughts are that people like Deepak Chopra and Nelson Mandela may be on their way there. So that's the different levels that I am talking about at that time.
And Georgina, is there a plane that people find easier to be with than others? One that we naturally feel more connected with? Or how does that play out for you in your thoughts?
What I found is that there are people who live very comfortably on the physical plane, and then once they come in for some work in the subconscious mind, whether it's to be change a habit or to develop self-esteem or to learn to be a good public speaker, and once they actually tap into the subconscious mind and they realize that they are more than they seem, then they get very excited about the etheric plane and the astral plane and the mental plane. And they begin to understand the power that they have within themselves. And by power, I don't necessarily mean strength. I mean education awareness. And they become aware of what they're capable of and how magnificent they are. And they really develop a joy in choosing which plane to live on at a specific time.
Oh, so is this something, when we're looking at the different planes, that we can consciously choose to put our attention on the physical plane? Or
yes.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yes.
So
yes.
What would be an example of that? Would that so
well, when I'm writing my books, for instance, or when I'm with a client in the clinic, once I have done and worked with them on the intake and asked all the questions that they can tell me that, or that they're aware of on the physical plane, I then literally take off my ego and take that away, that ego energy, and I move into both my etheric and my astral plane, because I ask for help all the time. And, of course, I need part of the mental plane, otherwise I wouldn't be able to speak. But by and large, I operate out of those two. And slowly and gently, the client responds, because we are, it's a bit like a row of clocks in a room. You know, you set one clock, and after a while, they all, the pendulum swings the same way, as you know, from an energy point of view. But the client tunes in eventually, and they begin to understand that they are multi-layered and multi-leveled. And they get very excited. And they come in the following. For instance, I had a guy come in a couple of weeks ago, and he said, Georgina, I know you're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm now looking at trees, and I'm really seeing the tree. And I said, yeah, well, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, I see the leaves. I mean, I see the roots. I actually see and understand the tree. Does that make sense to you? And I said, yes, absolutely, it makes sense. He was tuning in. He was so excited. Doesn't mean he can't operate in his world as a banker, but absolutely he can tune in.
And do you find more and more people are tuning in?
It's hard to say. I could very easily say yes. Certainly, because the people that come to me are tuning in, but there are plenty of others who are not. You've only got to look on Facebook and in the newspapers and see the cruelty to animals and the cruelty to human beings, and you see that there are plenty of people who are not tuning in. But certainly more people are talking about it now that you wouldn't expect, like the banker. And it's becoming more commonplace, let's put it that way. But there are millions of people who unfortunately don't understand what we're really about. And when you see what they do to animals and to each other, you just shake your head and hope that soon they'll get it, very soon.
Yes, yeah. And I find personally that a lot of people have feelings that may be not of the physical plane, but they don't have the dialogue or the conversation or the words to be able to express these feelings. And
right.
One thing I've noticed about the internet is that words to express the feelings and resources to nurture the feelings are very much available. So dialogues are happening, maybe just because people know how to put words to that feeling.
Yes, and they're not ashamed of those words.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, I'd love to move on because there's just so many areas here. And as I told our listeners starting out, like one thing that I'd really like to do is use our time together to introduce different concepts, because
sure.
I know one or two are going to hook into some people and they'd like to explore them further. Now,
sure.
Karma, lots of people have heard the word karma. So I'd love to hear your take on karma and your philosophy and how you use that concept with your clients.
Well, my concept is slightly different from some other people. I believe that karma is really a reaction. Again, it's physics. It's a reaction. What you put out there is what you get. Not only what you do, but what you think, how you behave, the language you use, your view of the world. So if you view the world as a cruel, nasty place, then that will be the world you live in. I also believe that when we come into this lifetime, our current lifetime or any lifetime, we bring with us the residue of the previous lives we've lived. So we come in with a hand of cards to play. And how we play those cards is totally up to us. So if you come in and claim that you're a victim because you were born into a family that's brutal, then if you stay there, that's up to you. It just means you'll have to come back again and relive it so you get out of that victimhood. If you think about an opportunity that exists in any situation, you know, I used to work at a place called Bloviel Hospital, I volunteered, where children, young teenagers, are in wheelchairs, they're disabled, or something's happened to them, either they're born that way or they have an accident. And you get three teenagers in wheelchairs. One will become a CEO of a company, one will become an athlete, and one will go on social welfare. And it's a choice. It's a choice of seeing it as, I mean, it's horrible either way. I'm not making light of anything. But I'm just saying, some people say, I'm going to make this work for me rather than give into it. So that's what I talk about karma. You can change karma. You can play your hand of cards. Absolutely you can.
Yeah. And do you feel that however the soul chooses to present itself in the lifetime, that we have everything we need to move to a higher vibration?
Most of the time, you know, I'm always very cautious of generalization because there are people, for instance, in the depths of despair in the Sudan or in Afghanistan or in the Congo. These people still, some of them rise above and are generous and kind. Others become greedy and cruel. So it's there's great grades of this type of thing. There's no absolutes here, I don't believe.
Okay. Just compassion and understanding.
We can be very America-centric if we're not careful and forget about what goes on in some of the really terrible parts of the world. And these are also human souls that are going through their issues.
Mm-hmm. Now, Georgina, you have a chapter on death. And this is usually that people are hesitant to touch or talk about. So wondering if you could share your thoughts and ideas with our listeners about that.
Yes, I really just believe we're here temporarily. So we're just borrowing the body, right? This is the bus or the car or whatever we're in. Death really is just moving on to another time, another place, and just being very cautious about how we're using this body in time and place. And we are, it's all temporary. It's hard to explain. If you're just going from one room to another. I think that's the phrase I use. I don't even have the book in front of me. We literally just go from one place to another. We're not really ending anything because we're energy. And if you work with people and if you understand when you do the life between lives or the interlife work, we leave a portion of ourselves behind in the interlife, in the soul place, in the life between lives, in Bardo. So it never goes away. We're not disappearing. And you often do feel that. You feel people that have passed on. You understand that there are people around you who supposedly have died, whether they move a picture or they leave an envelope on your desk or they give you some sort of message in some way, shape, or form. We know there's not an ending. It's just a passageway.
And I liked how you Yeah, well, you also talked about the art of dying, as if this lifetime is a training ground in which we learn the art so we can live again.
Well, it's all about the soul learning and the soul evolution. It's all about, it's like going to school. This is school. Mm. So if you don't learn the lessons, you have to redo that grade. I mean, basically.
Yeah.
This is process. It's only process. And one of the things that's lovely about it is if you really do accomplish your soul purpose, there's a great sense of exhilaration and there's an excitement about what's next. So what you don't want to do is die with regret and leave this planet with regret that there's something you should have done or could have done or accomplished. And when I talk about accomplished, I'm not talking about business accomplishments. I'm talking about soul accomplishment.
Now, Georgina, what I'm going to do, I'm going to give our listeners a little break and play one of our information ads here that we have here, information spots, and we will be back in about 30 seconds. How does that sound?
Sounds good to me.
We hope you're enjoying this broadcast of Firefly Willows LIVE on Blog Talk Radio. For information on Firefly Willows, please explore our website, fireflywillows.com, or like us on Facebook. A personal tarot reading can offer you insight, information, enlightenment, and empowerment along your life's path. Hi-C is a professional tarot conversationalist and ritualist with over 10 years' experience. He's available for readings in a variety of formats, including parties and events. To schedule your personal tarot reading, contact Hi-C at tarotbyhic.net or email him at hic@fireflywillows.com.
All right, we're back again. Georgina, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, excellent. All right, now this is a topic that I'm sure, whether people are comfortable with the concept of past lives or not, almost everybody has had an experience where they may have felt deja vu, or they may have felt when they meet someone, oh, I know that person from somewhere. They seem so familiar to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I know people are out there shaking their heads, yes, this has often happened to me. So can you talk a little bit about why we may choose the lives we choose and how that's captured through past life regression?
We choose the life either to enable ourselves to learn and grow or to enable someone else. What do I mean by that? Sometimes we have a parent or a sibling that is very, very difficult to get along with. They seem to do everything to diminish us and aggravate our life. And they and because of that, they alienate everyone around them. So they have chosen to live that life so that to enable you to find your way through. I remember many, many years ago, one of my psychiatrists that I went to a long time ago said to me, one day you'll thank your mother. And I said, you've got to be kidding. You've really got to be kidding. And he said, no, I'm very serious. Since I have been doing this work for the past 17 years or so, I totally get what he's saying. Because without her, I wouldn't be who I was. So I have to honor her and thank her for living a very difficult life where she was disliked, certainly unloved by her siblings and by her children. And it was a lonely life for her. She made it herself, but she did it so that we could learn to be, again, resilient and not be her, so that we could learn to be caring and tender and loving and adaptive, all of the things she wasn't. So we choose a life so that we can enable ourselves to learn and also to enable others. That's what's called a soul contract as well. So because we are in relationship.
Now, when you went through this process and you did get to a point where you felt you could thank your mom, did you feel a sense of relief? Did that register in your soul and express itself in your person in any way.
Yes, I know. What I did feel was very sad for her. I mean, that was first was the recognition that, oh my gosh, that's what it was all about. And that, oh my gosh, what a terrible life she chose to, so that she could enable my sister and myself to become who we are. It was a form of sadness and gratitude and understanding, but it was a deep sadness. And then as I read more and more and understand more, I don't know if you've read the book, A Little Soul in the Sun. It's a beautiful book, and it talks about things like that, and I give it to children all the time.
So it's called A Little Soul in the Sun?
Yes. It's written by Neil Donald Walsh, the man who wrote Conversations with God.
Yes. Do you know that? I didn't know that. That's so for our listeners. Oh,
yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
To women who've been abused or teenagers who have anger issues, and it helps them understand their role in their family and in their life.
Okay, so A Little Soul in the Sun. So for parents out there and anybody else that might be listening, that might be the book for you. And also, I really liked how you talked about making sense of what was presented to you in your own family, personally,
as
you got older, you were able to. Because I find with a lot of people, you're dealing with concepts and beliefs and energies, and sometimes you just don't know where to put them.
Right.
And then the energy turns backwards and or back into you, and it causes suffering. So one great benefit, Georgina, that I see from the beautiful work that you're doing is you're helping people find out where they can put this stuff, giving a framework context.
Yeah,
so beautiful. Now, this topic, the soul and soulmates, we live in a society that has the romantic idea about soulmates, but your take is a little different. Can you share a little bit about that?
Sarah, I believe that soulmates are people who are sent to help the soul grow. And that can include an irascible neighbor. It can include an unfortunate teacher at school or instructor at a course you're taking. It can include people who drive you crazy at work or siblings or family, as well as people who enhance your life through love and tenderness and understanding. Because when people are difficult, you learn. It's like us when we make mistakes. We don't learn if we do everything right. We only learn when we make mistakes. So we learn through freedom. We learn through rubbing together. So when someone drives us crazy, we hopefully learn how to deal with it, how to handle it, how to rise above it. We learn about boundaries. We learn about tact, information, and just allowing people to be who they are. And one of the things I do say to the clients all the time is it's amazing. We want people to take us the way we are, and yet we don't allow people to be who they are. We want them to be like us. So next time your boss drives you crazy because of his patterns or habits, think about the patterns and habits you have and how we expect people to take you as a whole person, just the way I am, and think about him that way or her that way.
Excellent, excellent advice. I'm sure I'll take that myself.
It's funny. We really do want to change people all the time.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. I have red hair, and I like the autumn colors, and I can't tell you how many people I've tried to introduce to autumn colors, although they're not autumns. Georgina, in a couple of places, as you were talking about your work, you mentioned the word interlife.
Yes.
What is interlife?
Interlife is the life between lives, the passage in between lifetimes. So if in one life you came in as a sailor, for instance, and you traveled the world on a merchant boat, and another lifetime you were a farmer or a farmer's wife or a geisha, or a samurai warrior, what about the place in between? What about the passage in between of those two lives when you didn't have a body? That's called the interlife. That's when you're bodiless, carless. That's just your energy. And that's when you truly are going home, where you return back to your source. That's when you meet your guide and get your soul name You can visit your Akashic records or other information. You meet your soul circle. You can go and learn there how to manifest your energy in a different way. Or you can just go for a place of rest and peace. It really is a space in between lifetimes.
This is a term that people are becoming more familiar with, the concept.
Yes, yes they are. Thanks to the work of Michael Newton, who was one of the pioneers in Life Between Lives, and I studied with him, by the way, quite a few years ago. Yes, they're becoming more familiar with it and understanding that, again, we are more than the body. So what's the more bit? And where does that more bit go? And it goes into the interlife. And
gotcha.
It's really exciting. It's awe inspiring, that journey. It's absolutely hair raising. It's amazing. And everybody that takes it is just in awe.
What you talk about is heaven and hell both existing on earth.
Yes.
What's that all about?
That is really, it's another extension, another point of view, an extension of the point of view I had before, that we make our lives what we see. So I don't know about you, but when I'm shopping for new boots or a new car or a new anything, I start looking at other people's stuff. We see what we look for. So if we believe that the world is a bitter and unkind place, then that's all we see. Then going back again to the people in the Congo or people in Sudan or in Afghanistan, there are always people who are kind and who see kindness, even in the worst situations. If you read anything about the Holocaust, you will read that there are people in the concentration camps who were kind to each other and who made the best of everything, whatever was around them. So they made a heaven in, even though they were in hell. And I'm sure that there are people in the Sudan today doing exactly the same thing. But we know that there are people in our world, in our North American world, who by and large, we're very fortunate. We have most of what we need, most of us, who find it wrong. Everything's wrong. Everything's not good enough. Everything's a problem. So they're making their hell in what many people, most of the world, would call a heaven.
That's an excellent point. And as you were talking, I was remembering to your point that we, you know, we see what we want to see or where we focus our attention. I remember a friend of mine was desperately trying to become pregnant. And for months, when she would go grocery shopping or be out in the park or wherever, all she would see are moms with babies or pregnant women.
Right.
Something she never noticed before nor talked about. So that's exactly what you're saying, where we focus our attention.
Exactly what you're saying. You got it, absolutely. And it's the same with people who just had a breakup of a relationship. Everywhere they look, they see couples. It's really funny. They come in and say, everywhere I look, I see people walking hand in hand. I said, really? We see what we look for, no question.
Now, the absorption process, I'm looking at your talking about using wisdom learned, and you're talking about a term called an absorption process. I've never heard about that before.
Well, this is one of the things that makes this book really different, because I as you know, I've been in this a long time, this profession, and people come out of journeys, both past lives and into life, with great wisdom and energy and understanding, but they don't know what to do with it most of the time. In my clinic, what I do is this integration process, and it never occurred to me to write about it before. A lot of times when people come out with new information, they want to go and quit their job, they want to get rid of their partner, they want to make radical change because they have been, quote, enlightened. And, I literally say, slow down, slow down. First of all, you're going to drive everybody around you crazy. Nobody likes to know it all, and you've just begun. This is just the beginning, as we all are, just beginners. Slow down. Let's see how we can absorb it into your life rather than get rid of your life. Let's see, and if you want to teach everybody else how wonderful it is, start living it rather than talking about it and telling them what they're doing wrong. So it really is just an absorption process, a very slow, not very slow, but a slow, steady absorption process of the wisdom you've learned to enrich your life, not necessarily change it. There may be some things you change, but by and large, it's about enrichment.
I like that. And it sounds like it would take you a while to absorb your new knowing into those different levels of plane, you know, the physical plane, the mental plane.
Yes.
And to give yourself the gift of honoring that process.
Yes.
Yeah.
So instead of going into work and saying, you know, my boss is this and that and the other, he doesn't have any idea that he has a soul, none of it, none of that, none of that, you go in, you learn to become forgiving and accommodating and gentle. So you gentle down rather than go out fighting, trying to change the world the way you want it. Yeah, it's very different.
Yeah, it is. I love it. I really like that. That one's really sticking to me, the absorption process. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Now, Georgina, if someone wanted to learn more about your work or access your books, or there's also great videos on your website, how would they go about doing that?
They go onto the website, www.georginacannon.com, and they can email me if they have any questions, and I answer every email, and would be happy to see them in the clinic if they want to come into the clinic.
Okay. Now, your clinic's in Toronto, though, right?
Yes, it is. But from time to time, I do travel. For instance,
okay.
I will be teaching in May. And we're not sure whether it's going to be San Francisco or Chicago. But keep tuned. And if you want to sign up for my newsletter, absolutely you can do that on the website. And that way you'll get a notice of where I'm teaching. Two years ago, I taught in Ireland and in Israel. And so in other words, you know, I'll go where I can teach because I want people to understand the power of this work. And anybody and everybody should, I believe, that it can only benefit them.
Yeah, and if you're going to be in San Francisco, you'll have to let me know.
Oh, indeed. I will. It'll be on my website. It'll be in my newsletter. So I'll make sure you get a copy of the newsletter.
Thank you. And in the final chapter of your book, you do talk about some case histories and healings,
yes.
And people love that. Like, so that would be real life stories of people that you've experienced.
Yes, and just a fraction of them, because you can imagine how many thousands I've worked with over the past years, including some for TV and different programs. But yes, and every time they blow me away. They just are extraordinary. You can never get bored. I mean, talk about sitting in the lobby of a hotel and watching the world go by. I sit and watch time go by. It's amazing.
Well, it sounds like that you are truly doing the work your soul wants to do. And not only that, you have the courage to do it, because I imagine along the trail in your 17 years, an eyebrow or two has been raised in your direction.
Oh, indeed. Certainly 17 years ago, even to talk about hypnosis, it raised a lot of eyebrows. So I did a lot of education in the medical field. I did grand rounds at hospitals and stuff like that. And latterly, certainly, the past lives and interlife. But more and more people are being interested about it. You know, and it's really funny when I go for dinner with friends or family and somebody there who I don't know, and they say to me, so what do you do? My friends say, please don't get her going.
Well, I say, please get her going.
It's a passion. What can I tell you? It's amazing. It's affirming. It's life-affirming for everyone. I don't know anyone who, if they've had a past life or an interlife session or learned about it and ethically, I don't know anyone who hasn't benefited. It's extraordinary work.
And thank you very much for doing this work. It's wonderful for you and us and for the world, Georgina, so thank you. Now, I'm going to let you go now, although I would love to talk to you all day. I will let you go, and hopefully, in a little while, maybe in another 6 months or so, you can bring us up to date again about what you're up to.
That would be lovely, because I'm in the middle of writing a new book,
Do you have a title for your book?
It's about relationships. This other one is about relationships, both past, present, and future.
Lovely. Okay, well, we'll be waiting for that. So thank you so much for joining us today, and have a wonderful day in Toronto. Thank you, Georgina.
Bless your heart.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. What a great conversation. Many thanks again to Dr. Georgina Cannon for sharing her knowledge and her wisdom and herself with us today. If you'd like to go to her website, once again, the address is www.georginacannon.com. And hey, while you're there, why not sign up for her newsletter and take in a few of her videos that show Dr. Cannon in action? In a few minutes, we're going to beam over to San Francisco and talk with Mary Reynolds Thompson, author, life coach, and facilitator of poetry and journal therapy, and Bruce Thompson, assistant professor at the California Institute of Integral Studies. As a matter of fact, I've met Bruce only a few short months ago at the Pachamama Alliance in Petaluma. He's a great guy, and the two of them together provide excellent commentary and conversation. What are we talking about? We're going to be exploring how the separation from the earth and the natural world may be at the root of so many of today's problems. It's bound to be a lively discussion. In the meantime, enjoy the music of Robert Cotter from St. John's, Newfoundland. It's called Hope All River Falls. This is Mildred Lynn McDonald, and I'm your host for Healing Conversations. Please stay tuned. Hello, Mary, and hello, Bruce.
Hello.
Hello, Mildred Lynn.
And how is the weather today where you are?
Well, we just had, after an incredible night of pouring rain, power outages, et cetera, we just had a gorgeous rainbow, so it's turned.
Oh, wow. Now, what I wanted to do with you guys, because we're so happy that you're here today, is I was thinking, Mary and Bruce, maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about how you guys show up in life. So who would like to go first?
How we show up in life. Well, I'll dive in there. well, we show up in life in many different ways. I think, you know, we're both teachers in our own ways, both writers, both deep lovers, passionate lovers of this beautiful earth from which we emerged. We're both of us on a spiritual path, which is lovely, lovely to share with a partner. And I think we're sort of curious beings who are seeing both in our relationship together and in our increasing sort of, you know, how we're learning and evolving, that, you know, life, it's not static. I think that's how we show up. We show up as evolving beings in an evolving universe.
And so we co-evolve together. That's part of how it works. And then, you know, we both come. We've been married almost 15 years now, and we've been co-creating a life together in that time. And we both have learned a lot in that process. We both have gone back to school in that time, and I've gone back and got a master's degree in philosophy, cosmology, and consciousness. And now I'm teaching in that program at the California Institute of Integral Studies. And Mary can talk about what she's done, and she's actually learned from me, and I've learned from her. And so that's how this co-evolving osmotic process has worked.
Yeah. And Mary, you just published a beautiful book.
Thank you.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Yeah, I love your book. And how I found out about it is Bruce and I were at the Pachamama Leadership Huddle in Petaluma a couple of months ago. He mentioned that you had this book, so I went over and I looked at it, and it was not only visually stunning, but the messages inside were stunning too. So I'd love to share a little bit about your book with our readers.
Oh, I'd love to do that. And,
I mean,
you know,
our listeners, sorry.
Well, hopefully soon to be my readers. You know,
yes,
you never know.
Yeah.
You know, and I love the fact that Bruce is my best promoter. You know, what a wonderful thing. He is always taking the message of embrace your inner wild, 52 Reflections for an Ecocentric World. And this was a book that I did with a fascinating man who spent 35 years in San Quentin prison. And as he says it, you know, you learn patience in a prison. And patience is a wonderful thing for wildlife photography. So this book is really his amazing, amazing wildlife photographs with my reflections, which are really an invitation to move us from egocentricity, which is this very sort of isolated, humans are separate condition, to ecocentricity, which is really the understanding that humans are part of the great community of life.
And what about other books? I think you have some other books too, is that correct?
Well, actually, I'm very excited to be able to say that my next book, which is Reclaiming the Wild Soul, is going to be out on Earth Day 2014. And I've just arranged that with my publisher, so I'm terribly excited. And that's based on the great archetypes of the Earth. And essentially, it sets up a spiritual journey that takes people through the deserts and the forests and the mountains and the oceans and rivers and the grasslands as aspects of their own soul. And so it's a way of really reclaiming our wildness and our wholeness through beginning to see that we are earth beings and we carry these archetypal landscapes inside of us, and they can be a tremendous source of wisdom and inspiration for us.
I can hear the passion in your voice, and it's so beautiful. Bruce,
thanks.
Can you hear it too?
I hear it all the time.
Poor man, he hears it over breakfast too.
I hear it over breakfast. I hear it before I get up in the morning, practically.
how do you fit into this picture?
Well, this goes back to the cosmology, which is this understanding that we are the Earth, that we come from the Earth, and that this is this issue of the separation that's hurting us, that's causing, is the root of a lot of our problems, which is that we've all come out of the Earth. I mean, every one of us, are beings that have come out of this 4.5 billion year process of the Earth itself and this 13.7 billion year process of the universe evolving. And that process has been kind of cut short in our spiritual being by the psychological effects of the Enlightenment, this kind of mental process where we think we're this mechanical being, when we hit the Enlightenment hit, we had all this thinking, all this science, which is great stuff, but mm-hmm. we sort of cut ourselves off. I heard earlier, like when you were talking to Georgina about, and you were talking about, she talked about a client who was a banker who could see trees, right?
Yes.
And this process of seeing trees is a natural part of us because we are related to the trees. And this is what Mary's talking about in her book. This is, we are connected to the trees. They're our cousins. And this disconnection from the trees, disconnection from the rocks, this disconnection from the earth itself is letting us do a lot of the destructive behaviors, both to ourselves and to the earth, that is causing a lot of, our problems, consumerism, alcoholism, drug addiction, and just general depression, malaise, et cetera, that's at the root of a lot of our problems.
Now, I know you two are very, very well versed in this area, and not only do you recognize the difficulties, such as the isms that are happening, and I'd like to throw in people feeling isolated would also be an isolationism, would be another one.
Absolutely.
But what makes you guys unique is that not only do you grasp the breadth and the depth of this type of situation, but you've, on a positive note, you've come up with a five-step process that people can go through to help heal and reconnect themselves with the earth.
That's right. We just really, it's a model in some ways that sort of stems and arises from 12-step work. So the first thing that sort of all 12-step programs recognize is the first thing you have to do is recognize that there's a problem. So the first step is awareness, this simple understanding. So many of us, you see, don't understand that we're separated from the earth. We know, we recognize that we feel empty, for example, or we feel lonely, that isolationism you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know why. So the first thing is sort of to wake up and to become aware of the fact, oh, there is a problem here. Just like the alcoholic goes, oh, it's not that, why do I keep blacking out? Why do I burn out every relationship? There must be something wrong with X, Y, Z. oh, and then the moment comes, ah, maybe the root cause of all this is that I'm drinking. So
yeah, what's the common denominator here,
Exactly. It's the common denominator. So for us, really, we're saying that separation from the earth is that common denominator. And the starting place of this five-step process is just simply to recognize that.
It's the waking up. It's in all spiritual processes, an awakening process. And it doesn't happen, you know, sometimes it happens in a blinding flash. There are people who have, you know, those kind of incredible cosmic moments. But most people, it's an educational process. It's a, and it's just gradually you suddenly find yourself, wait a minute, I'm so much different than I was a few years ago. You know, that's when I think most of your listeners will discover that they are a different person than they were, and there's this gradual process of awareness and awakening. So, but you have to consciously work on it.
It's funny, when you were going, I was going, ooh, ouch, ooh.
Ooh, ouch, ooh. Well, sometimes the ahs and the ohs are the oohs, ouchs, and the oohs. You know, sometimes you have to feel a little pain to wake up. So that sometimes you start noticing that there's some things in the world that are disturbing, and that's why you start waking up. That's what happens a lot of times with people in drug addiction or alcohol or food addiction or whatever the addictions are. It's the pain that wakes them up. And a lot of times, like, it's the pain in the world that wakes you up. Like, again, Georgina was talking, she mentioned Sudan a few times. You know, you start seeing the world has its problems, and you go, well, something's wrong here. And you keep noticing, and it's rubbing at you like a stone in a shoe. And you go, I know there's something wrong. So you start waking up to it, and then you start looking to what's causing these problems, and you go deeper and deeper. Then you start going, aha, I see. And we who've been looking at this a long time start seeing it's this separation from nature is at a lot of the core of the problem.
Now, I wanted to throw something out there for your consideration. What I've noticed is it's like a person who has a long-term chronic illness, maybe something like rheumatoid arthritis or osteoarthritis or Crohn's disease or something like that. After time passes or lapses, the person forgets what it feels like to be healthy.
Yes.
So that's forgotten. So I'm wondering, in the context of awareness and the earth and connection with the earth, I would say people say we're asleep, people say we're in denial. I wonder if we've forgotten what it smells like to breathe healthy air. I'm just using very generic terms. Wanted to find out what your thoughts are on that forgetfulness.
I think that's really a very important point that you bring up. We really forget who we are, and I think that's the great forgetting. And, you know, there was really an occasion, a sort of turning point, I think, in our most modern history, sort of post-Second World War, where a retail analyst called Victor Lebeau essentially said, wow, there's all this spiritual energy in this country. Oh, and by the way, we have all these fabulous factories that have been making all these war machines that can now be making products. Why don't we connect people's spiritual hunger to a desire to consume products? So really, on one level, I mean, it goes back beyond that, but most recently, this intensification process of this forgetting has come through a marketing machine that has said, really, our purpose on life is to purpose in life is to consume. So, and we receive it sort of 24/7. That's the message we get. And so I love it, actually, when you say a generalization of get outside and, you know, feel the air. I don't think that's a generalization. I think that's a starting point. Literally, get outside. And some of you were talking about tulips earlier, too, you know, the envy the cold East Coast can have for the balmy West Coast, for the early tulips. But, you know, to wake up and smell the flowers and to feel, a way of remembering is to feel. An experience, a very simple exploration you can do. Spend the afternoon in the mall, and when you come back, journal about the way you feel. Spend the afternoon walking in a beautiful place by the beach or in a park or just spending time outside, enjoying nature, and come back home and journal how you feel. And I think you'll find that the way you feel after being outside is so much more deeply connected to who you are.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I believe that people will notice, and I've noticed this myself, I now go for a 45 to 1 hour walk every morning at the break of dawn, because I love the break of dawn and I love to inhale the air. If I miss that walk, I crave it.
Yes.
Is crave the right word? I don't know if crave is the right word, but I hear it. I'm trying to think of a higher word.
Well, there's a longing in you. Let's
there's
put it.
A longing. Yes. I yearn for that walk, and no one was more surprised than me that I had that reaction to it. So I would offer that to our listeners, that as you go out and absorb those beautiful vibrations in nature, then your body is going to naturally want to bathe itself in more of those vibrations. How's that? Does that sound fair?
Absolutely. Your body and your spirit and your psyche, all of you. I think that that's really true, because you will probably have noticed after your walks that it's not just your body that feels better, but sometimes your most creative thoughts may have come to you, or an insight or a problem that you've been puzzling over, the answer will have come to you. So a lot can happen in the simple act of walking.
Well, that brings you
and that's available to everyone. Yeah. Oh, sorry,
that brings
Bruce,
us really to step two, really, which is attraction of our 5-step program. Because what we're saying too, a lot of times, you know, a lot of these things are framed in sort of a fear-based mode. Like, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. But we're saying it should be an attraction. We're attracted to the natural world. It's a beautiful place. It's where we belong. It's our home. It's where we come from. And when we get there, we feel that attraction. And this idea of attraction, when you think about the power of love and attraction versus the power of fear, negativity, it's a much better energy field.
And more sustainable.
And it's more sustainable.
It does, because it feeds you. I mean, I think, you know, when we love something, it grows itself. It doesn't dissipate us. When we do things out of duty or discipline or, you know, the perfectionism that you were talking about earlier, it can be very, very draining. But when you do it from love, then it really feeds you.
There's an unlimited power in love, exactly. It's the ultimate energy source, totally renewable.
Now, if a person was at home and they're saying, I really like what Mary and Bruce have to say, how do I, Mary, you gave that great exercise about the mall and outside breathing. Is there an exercise in the realm of attraction that a person can engage in to help them navigate through this stage?
Well, you know, there are many, many ways. I mean, one of the things that I would say is really just notice this is awareness is also related to attraction. So in other words, don't say, if somebody says to you, oh, you've got to go and do this, don't take that as a given. Find out what you love to do. Find about ways that you like to connect to nature. I know people who are gardeners. I'm not a gardener. It doesn't do it for me. I like to be out in wild nature, not planting anything. I mean, that's the way I like to be. Other people really can nurture a pot plant and find that they get drawn in through that. So find something that works for you, for your time schedule, and what you love to do.
Mildred Lynn, this is where your original discussion of good enough press on comes in. This
yes.
is something where it doesn't have to be perfect. You know, there's something they say in the 12-step program, progress, not perfection. You know, you can just, you know, it doesn't really, there's no perfection here. It's just about getting in touch with something that works for you. And a little bit, all it takes is a little bit. The Mary photographer, Don, when he was incarcerated, his connection to nature at one point was seeing a piece of grass through the crack in the bars in his prison cell. And he used that as his touchstone of nature. So we can all find nature anywhere if we really are willing to look for it.
Yeah, and as you were speaking, the other thing that came in for me is with the potted plant sounds so beautiful. It actually, it sounds like something I could actually manage. there are those that would feel that the potted plant isn't enough. And they feel that, well, if I have to connect with nature, I need to go all out and connect with nature, or I'm not doing it right. So they choose to put it on the plane of right and wrong. What guidance can you give in that area?
Well, I think, you know, I think that that's, I love it because it's really permeated all your discussions today with people. I think that that's something that you've got to make a choice about, is that if you make it about right and wrong, you're not going to be connected to that joy. And really, you know, connecting to the natural world, more than anything in my book, is about becoming alive, fully, vibrantly alive. This is really what we hunger for in life. And if you're going to put things into the category of shoulds and shouldn'ts, you know, good and bad, this is what a lot of environmentalists do to the detriment of the whole environmental movement. You know, one person puts a can in the wrong, you know, recycling thing, and they're ballistic. Or they tell kids you can't build, you know, tree houses anymore because it's not good for the trees. They take the fun out of it. So what I would say to you is, one of the big things nature's going to teach you is life is unpredictable, it's amazingly challenged, it's totally wild, and guess what? It's fun. So have fun with it.
I like that a lot. So we could even invite people to look at what they're doing, add humor in it, laugh at themselves when they find
Yes. Bruce and I peer at our neighbors' recycling cans on occasion and sort of look at each other in disbelief. But the truth is, those people are trying to do something good for the earth. And
exactly.
This is the point. There is a longing in them, as there is in really anybody given half the chance, to ensure that this beautiful planet goes on being beautiful.
That's right. You know, this is one of the things, too. You know, earlier you were talking about this funny thing about when you had your doctor in Halifax, right? And if you could take care of your body the way take care of your car, of course, our earth is our body, too. We can only take care of the earth as well as we take care of our cars, too. Because some people, I see these people out there polishing and doing all this stuff to their cars, mostly guys. But, this is, if we could just do the same thing with the earth, but we don't have to be ridiculous about it. You know, and we do get a little crazy sometimes. This is good enough press on. I mean, we could just be, pretty good about it. I mean, the Earth itself does some pretty crazy stuff, right? So, we can, it's pretty destructive at times. Look at some of these hurricanes and tornadoes. There's a lot of destructive energy in the natural process of nature. So, I mean, it's perfection in imperfection is the way you have to look at it. And so we can accept that.
I wondered, Mary and Bruce, if there is a saying or if there's some way that if we can give people a framework to feel good about what they're doing today, even if the first step and the most step is staring at a blade of grass, something they can say to themselves that will give them encouragement to
good
move on maybe
press
to the next
on.
Step.
Good enough, press on.
All right.
But you know something, this really brings us to our third point, which is alliances to create community. Because I think this is where a lot of that affirmation, that kind of championing of what we're doing, and also the sharing. I mean, what I found and Bruce and I have found in the work that we do separately and together is that when communities begin to share about their relationship with nature, their experiences out of doors, what they're doing to help, work to save the earth, what happens is that hole that I started to talk about in the awareness thing gets filled. What people realize is that they're happier and that there's a level of engagement. When you talk to anybody, I don't care, I would say, I'm going to be bold here and say, I bet just talk to just about anybody. And you ask them about a moment where they felt connected to spirit. And more often than not, you will hear about a moment in nature. Ask somebody when they felt happiest. You will find that it's really, you know, they took the kids to the beach. They went out camping. They, you know, they had an experience out of doors. So once you begin to amplify that through community and sharing your stories with other people, I think that's what really creates encouragement for more experiences.
And again, this is one of these, too, this is where a person takes their own individual, like you talked about your karmic path, if a person takes their own path, their own gifts, and then finds others who are aligned with those gifts, and then they find their passion, whatever their passion happens to be, and finds others with that same passion. And again, this goes back to, I know all these people who are into permaculture. I've tried it, and it's not my passion, but there are people who find it absolutely enthralling, and there's all these groups doing it, and people are, you know, all over doing this work. And we just heard about the other night, now there are all these Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans that have found permaculture to be a completely healing practice. And so they're coming back with all their war wounds and feeling empty inside, and they're using permaculture both as a way to heal the earth and to heal themselves. And so, you know, people can find ways to connect with others and connect with the earth in incredible different ways, but with others. You know, so you find different, you know, groups and alliances that work for them in their particular path.
And, you know, the other thing about that, which I think is really important, is that our feelings about the earth have been made to feel foolish. You know, when people talk about a mystical experience in the earth, a feeling of union with that, I really see the tree, as that businessman said, you know, oftentimes we're made to feel silly and naive for those feelings. But to be amongst people who absolutely honor that relationship is actually fundamental and is part of our inheritance, to have this deep and profound mystical longing and deep desire to connect with the natural world and not to make light of that.
Yeah, I agree with that one. And I think that goes back to the conversation that we were having earlier with Georgina, where I was saying it took a lot of courage to speak about past lives and karma and interlife and all those concepts that people might not be used to talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, the other thing I wanted to mention, too, as I was listening to you both was, yes, start and do something and don't judge it, but also patience plays a role. And I have a personal experience with that because I searched for about a year and a half or 2 years for an environmental group that I felt I could connect with. I was desperate for community, desperate. I was awake and the trees in my backyard just weren't doing it anymore. I needed people and trees. So it took me about almost 2 years to find the Pachamama Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And once I exposed myself and I was open to the message, it was just like boom, boom, boom. There's my people.
There you go.
If anybody is listening out there and they're saying, well, yeah, this all sounds great, but I've tried this and I've tried that and I just don't seem to be able to connect, what I'd like to offer for your consideration is patience and to just keep moving along and staying open, because my journey was a year and a half to 2 years. And the other thing I'd like to offer it is when you find your cause or you find your people or you find your message, you know it. You know it right from your heart. I don't know if that's happened to you, Mary or Bruce. Or
that's exactly right. And that's, of course, it's one of the wisdom of nature, because nature has infinite patience. And so if you just, you're trying to, you know, mirror what nature's lessons are, one of them is that nature has patience and, you know, and it waits and waits and waits for the right moment for things to happen. And so if you're trying to do what nature does, you have that patience. But patience while keeping aware and awake and keeping trying to make things happen. You're not sitting in your, you know, room, you know, watching television the whole time and not, you have your antenna out, you're looking, you're aware. That's a different kind of patience than kind of in a cave not doing anything.
Right, and I think to that modeling of nature, of course, nature loves community too.
Exactly.
I mean, nature is all about interdependence and about creating community. So the patience that is longing in a way and is supporting you in creating an eco community that you can really feel a part of. And that's really what gets us into the fourth step, which is,
exactly,
you know, when you become emboldened to take action. You know, when you have community, when you feel supported, at that point it really encourages you and gives you that kind of ballast that you need to move forth with whatever your calling is.
And you recommend, what would you recommend to help you with that?
Well, could I just say one thing about action? It's when you, in action, you know, you want to, you don't want to just rush off into kind of wild action. I always think, many years ago I saw Andrew Harvey talking about, you know, spiritually grounded action. And he said if he looked at all the different spiritual traditions in the world, and he found one commonality, which he uses the acronym PMS. He's not talking about women's problems.
No.
What he's saying was prayer, meditation, and service. And so you have your prayer when you're asking for guidance, your meditation, which is then you're listening for what that guidance is, and then you go into service. So that's what you do in your action. So you want to be spiritually grounded in whatever action you take. You're not just willy-nilly just running off. So you ground yourself in whatever action you're taking by making sure it's grounded in a true spiritual path, so you're not just doing something that's totally self-will driven.
I just wanted to add another S so that we had it.
Oh, sure.
PMSS, which is, and I think it really comes out of the meditation and prayer, which is silence.
Yes.
You know, and this sense that we live in a world that is so buzzy, busy, bristling with things to do, and to enter the silence. And I think that's what prayer and meditation allows you to do, and really to encourage that prayer and meditation out of doors, to invite the silence of the natural world into that.
So if someone was listening, and this is fabulous for me personally, so feeling the need to go into action, my first step would be to pray.
Mm-hmm.
My second step would be to meditate on the action, or am I in action? How does that work? Like, I need a little bit more help with this one, as I'm sure some other people do too. So what would be an example, maybe from your own lives?
Well, Bruce, do you want me to... I don't think prayer and meditation are like sequential. I think this is part of our linear thinking that we get into, that you always have to. I know we've done five steps, so we've been a bit linear here, but essentially, you know, everything can be done. You can pray and meditate simultaneously. You can be of service in the process of meditating. You can pray while you are of service. You can be in silence when you are of service, praying and meditating. In other words, I don't think you have to. It's about a quality of attention, I think. And this really comes back to that of being a mindfulness, an awakeness, a questioning, and a humility. I think prayer and meditation is an invitation always to say, we don't know it all. Help me. You know, you talked earlier about vulnerability. It's about saying, I don't know. I don't have the answers. Show me. Show me. And so it's not so much do this, do this, do this, do that. Though some people may want to set up a very strict routine, and that's fine. But it's really about a way of holding yourself in the world.
I like that. That rings very true.
Yeah, there's obviously a state of consciousness that you're getting yourself into. And clearly there's also lots of wonderful prayers that you can have, you know, to open yourself up to, you know, specifically, you know, asking for guidance or gratitude, prayers of gratitude, just thanking, you know, nature, thanking the world for being in existence and asking to be doing the will of nature. You know, there's all kinds of wonderful prayers if you need to help structure yourself in that mode of consciousness. as well as ways of meditating, just open, you know, we all know there's lots of techniques of both meditation. Though in terms of meditation, it's always one of those ones that, it's funny, I went to this, one time I was at this Spirit Rock doing meditation with Sogyal Rinpoche, the Tibetan Lama who wrote the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. And he's one of those wonderful Tibetan, you know, lamas who laughs all the time. And he said, you know, you Americans, you're so funny. He says, we always think we have to get our meditation just right. And he said, you know, he's like, ho, you Americans, ho. You know, he's like those big, big, jolly Tibetans. And he was saying, essentially, again, about meditation, the key is just our intention. It's always intention. Yeah. He says, whether you do it for 50 minutes, 5 minutes, or 5 seconds, he says, you know, just make sure that you just, it's the intention. But don't do it while you're driving. That's the most important thing.
But, you know, when you were saying try to get it right, I was a perfect example of that. Because when we were, I was saying, well, do you pray and then meditate, or meditate and then pray, and then where does the action go? So what a great example. What a learning for me. The other thing is that as you guys were talking, in terms of action, and you were saying it's your awareness and your consciousness, and to me what was coming through is your connection to your higher self or to your spirit. And for our listeners, a poem that's always helped me in the action area, connect with spirit, is Mother Teresa's poem. It's a tribute. Someone else has written it, but it's often attributed to Mother Teresa, and it's called Do It Anyway.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with that, but I find there's nothing that gets me into action or makes me feel okay about the rocky road I may be walking than that particular poem, which, of course, is the vibrations offered in that poem. So I'd like to put that out for our listeners. And Bruce or Mary, if you have a piece that you find helps you, please feel free to share it.
Well, you know, I always think that I'm a great believer. You know, I'm a poetry facilitator, and so I work a lot with poetry. So poems are my prayers to a great extent. And I've always loved Mary Oliver's poetry, as many people do. And one of her poems, A Summer's Day, is incredible. And it really talks about, it ends with a question, which I think is so pertinent. You know, tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Wild and precious life.
Yes.
And that's a wonderful one. I have a wonderful little, very short little prayer from the indigenous people of the Sierra, the Yokuts people, which is, my words are tied in with the great mountains, with the great rocks, with the great trees, in one with my body and heart. All of you see me one with this world. Just a simple connecting with all of nature.
Yeah, it says it all. It's short,
mm-hmm.
yet it encompasses everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, what about alignment? That's your fifth point. What about that now?
Well, I think, and in fact, I was just reflecting on that poem that Bruce just read, which feels very much like alignment to me, but mm-hmm. I think it's that marvelous moment when you know that you are bringing forth your greatest gifts for the greatest good. That having your, and in for me very much, that spirit is, it's, I'm connected to my nature, my own true nature, through connecting to the natural world. That's how I connect. So I've connected to my true nature through connecting to the natural world, and I'm bringing forth my gifts in a way that feels real and true and passionate and authentic. And I remember this moment when my book Embrace Your Inner Wild was launched, and it launched at a fabulous independent bookstore called The Book Passage here in Marin County in Corte Madera. And it was a moment I had envisioned, I can't even tell you for so how long. This was where my action was in this process of writing books and bringing my message out through books. And I looked out at this sea of faces and people who were just there with love and openness in their heart. and Don and I were standing shoulder to shoulder, talking about the book, showing the photographs, and I realized in that moment that the message that I was trying to convey, that I long so much to bring forth in the world about the importance of connecting to nature, was getting through. Because I heard it, the ums and the ahs. I saw it in people's faces. And I felt this absolute blessing upon me. And I felt that sense, which is really that ecocentric sense, when you know you're just being channeled through and the ego isn't present and you are just being a vessel for what you were put on this earth to do. And I think that's possible for everybody. And I think for me, that's what the alignment is when everything comes into place and you're just giving of your gifts.
Beautiful. That sounds like you were definitely in the flow.
In that moment, I was.
Yeah.
And, you know, like all flows, it ebbs. And then it flows again. You know, you can't put that in a bubble. But in that moment, I truly felt it. And I felt it in other moments, too. But that was one of them, for certain.
Yeah, I'd say for me, too, I was giving a sermon at our local Unity Church here in Novato. And I was trying to get people inspired on dealing with the climate crisis, but also to understand our kind of connection to the, you know, cosmology and the connection to the universe and how we're all one and connected. And I just, at one point, I just felt completely connected with the audience, and, you know, I was just felt that I was in flow with them and really making, you know, it was all coming together. You know, it just really was, it was just, I felt like it was happening. You know, it just, it was all, you know, all the stuff I'd learned, everything I knew, spirit was just flowing right through me. And it was pretty intense, I must say. And it wasn't just me, it was the message was coming through. That's what I felt. I was just a channel for the message. So it was kind of like, that was, it was just like, whew. It was kind of nice.
So it's important for our listeners to know that these moments of feeling so connected and aligned are possible and that they do really exist.
They absolutely do exist. And I think, you know, I think everybody has a seed of that. They know that inside of them. And I think part of our heartbreak in the world and that emptiness that we fill with all kinds of crazy behaviors and is because we haven't gotten there yet. And there again, that patience that we talked about earlier is, you know, just by following where the aliveness is for you, where the attraction, you know, really connecting in to nature so that you can know your own nature. And doing these little practices, slowly but surely, things begin to fall into place. Or maybe very quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, Bruce said, you know, for us it was more of a slow evolving path. For some people, it can be, you know, a lightning rod. Everybody has their own timetable.
Exactly. And, you know, I've had a moment back 20-something years ago where I had this flash moment where I saw infinity and everything. And I was literally reading Joseph Campbell, you know, and I suddenly had that moment of clarity where all of infinity opened up to me. And it was just there for a moment. And it was gone. But it was like, oh, but that's it. You know, you just have it and it goes, and then you go back to doing your everyday work of trying to, you know, go through life. But you know, it's
the ecstasy, the laundry.
Exactly. The ecstasy, the laundry.
Yes.
And you got to go back and pay the bills, all that stuff.
Clean the rice bowl.
Clean the rice bowl. Get the kitty litter and scoop it out.
Cat
never stops shitting. It's always what goes on.
Now, Mary and Bruce, if people would like to get a hold of you guys and have a more of this type of conversation, or Mary, you know, purchase your book or whatever, attend your workshops and whatever you're up to too, Bruce, how would they do that? How would they get a hold of you?
Bruce, should I take this over? Because I'm better on this one. There are two ways that I would love people to get a hold of me. Is one, if they go to my book website, embraceyourinnerwild.com, they can read about the book, they can find out, there's lots of really wonderful video that was done on Dawn and me and images from the book. It's a great place just to go explore and have fun. Plus, they can download a 5-week series of inspirations that can actually give them real concrete things to go do in nature, have experiences. Mm. But then the other thing that we'd love to do is offer anyone listening to this show is a free meditation, a universe meditation that Bruce has written and gives. And it's a beautiful, I think it's about 5-10 minutes, honey? It's
About 5 minutes or so.
Yeah, about 5 minutes or so. And if anybody signs up on my Reclaiming the Wild Soul website, you'll not only get my newsletter, which will keep you apprised of all of our workshops and events and things that are going on, but also we would be very thrilled to give you this beautiful meditation that Bruce, I can say it's beautiful, because it is beautiful.
I'm so sure beautiful. It is.
Yeah, well, it brings you in touch with the connection with our connection to the earth and the universe. And so it's one way to bring ourselves into that consciousness.
What I wanted to remind our listeners is that this show is recorded. It's available in the Blog Talk Radio archives. It's also available on iTunes or at the Firefly Willows Live website. So if anybody was interested in revisiting the 5 steps that Mary and Bruce mentioned or accessing the website and they need to refresh themselves on the URL or whatever, it is there for you 24/7. So Mary and Bruce, I was extending a warm invitation to come back to the show.
Oh, okay, great.
Thank you. Well, we would love to accept it. When the time comes, we will say
we'll
a big
there.
And hearty yes. Thank you.
Yes, you've both been wonderful, wonderful guests, and I am so impressed that you were able to listen to aspects of the show and integrate them into your commentary. Very well done.
It's a lovely show. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, I'm going to let you go. You enjoy the day in California, and we'll look forward to having you on the show again.
Hey. Thank you, Mildred Lynn. Happy day.
Happy day. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. Next week on Revolution with High C, we revolutionize the spirit of the season. We'll journey from the mundane level of giving gifts to the spiritual plane of making offerings. Delve into the world of spirit and offerings in a conversation with guest Yeshe Rabbit, an enthusiastic wanderer along the winding path of esoterica for over 20 years. Rabbit co-owns Sacred Well in Oakland, California, and is presiding high priestess of Come As You Are Coven, an eclectic pagan community in the Bay Area. Enjoy our new feature, a monthly astrological outlook with astrologer James Moran, to help us best access and utilize the celestial energies at play. Rabbit will also be offering us a meditation and practice for making your own offerings for your evolution and the manifestation of what you want in life, and also in the manifestation of who you want to become. All this and more. So join High C in revolutionizing this time of year into a season of offerings on the next Revolution with High C. This is Deb Caracella. Please join us next Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time on Firefly Willows LIVE, Blog Talk Radio.